Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome again to Whiskey Congress. I'm coming to you from the Cleveland studio and drinking a glass of water. Steve is not here. Steve is not here. Where are you, Steve?
I am in Cabo San Lucas. It's a very, very beautiful tropical place. Not too tropical, though, because it's not humid. But it is beautiful. I'm looking at the Pacific Ocean right now. Some sand dunes, a giant man-made lagoon. Actually, the largest man-made lagoon in the world. Basically, it's a giant swimming pool. A lot of palm trees. Just saw a little gecko run by. I'm in a nice place.
Yeah, you are. I've been following vicariously on Facebook a little bit. It looks amazing down there. Any incredible vacation stories to share before we get into politics and such?
Yeah. So how about this? Yesterday, I'm not a big golfer, but I occasionally swing the clubs. And yesterday, got an opportunity to play on Tiger Woods' own. The first course that Tiger Woods designed here is called Cardinal. And actually, I came out blazing on the first two holes.
Okay.
Went par on a par four.
Okay.
And then won over on a par five, and then went to complete shit after that.
Was the influence of Corona Light causing problems, or just your natural golf?
No, I didn't get too deep. I didn't go into. I wanted to be somewhat lucid. So I didn't. I didn't partake too much beforehand. I'm a bigger, thicker guy, and golf is tough if you don't practice or play. So between me just being tight from lifting and not playing that often, I think the fatigue factor kind of kicked in early. I mean, it was warm, and it's a tough course. I mean, it's designed by Tiger. It's a top 50 in the world. The guys I was playing with, there was a lot of self-deprecating humor early just to kind of, counteract the fact that, I'm not going to play well. These guys play not only all the time, but they play this course regularly because they basically live here. So I was pleasantly surprised when I come out on the first two holes and didn't, stink it up.
And then, all right, well, you got to play golf on a Tiger Woods course and I haven't. So you're one up on that one. So how in touch with the world are you out there? My guess is
not very
good. Well, it feels good, doesn't it?
Part of the reason is a lot of the TV here, so the channels, it's weird. They have some American channels, but most of the channels here are in Spanish.
Right.
So, and not only that, the subtitles are Spanish, and it's a resort, so you're kind of limited.
Right.
But I have somewhat kept track, via my phone, but even my phone is somewhat limited because I'm on Mexican servers.
Okay.
So what's interesting is a lot of the ads are in Spanish for Spanish Viagra, which is hilarious.
You know what? If I try to do an in-character, yes.
Don't.
So how much have you been following so Barr testifies in front of the Senate and then was scheduled to testify in front of the House or House subcommittee. And he
didn't today.
He did not today. He basically said he didn't like the format that they wanted was for the lawyers of the representatives to be able to ask him questions directly. And honestly, I think he should be there, but I understand why he wouldn't let that happen. That's kind of a chicken shit move on the Democrats' part for wanting to not ask him. If you want to ask the Attorney General a question, ask him. Why do you need an attorney to do it for you?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I think, again, the Democrats are taking the wrong approach. I think that what they're trying to do is ensure that they make it seem that it's official as possible. But, I mean, the reality is, congressional testimony is congressional testimony, and what's said during that testimony is on the record.
Right.
Right. Like, so adding, you know, putting in the buffer of an attorney is just more of a, is more for looks. Now, I mean, there's some legal wrangling you could maybe say that you could maybe put in there, but I mean, it's an official congressional proceeding, but it's not an official judicial proceeding. So the need for the attorneys, like, it just, like, I don't see the reasoning for it. I'm sure that there's some legal jargon you can throw out there to try to explain it, but I think it is a bad move on their part. But I mean, it's also Barr. It also gives, like, Barr is just using that as a reason not to show up. I pretty much guarantee he probably wasn't going to show up no matter what the format was.
Then don't give him an excuse.
Agreed. I agree with that. But I mean, I think we both can agree that there's a pretty good chance he wasn't showing up,
sure,
no matter what format they gave him.
Sure, but again,
other than only Republicans asking him questions,
right,
that he wrote himself.
Right. Well, so his testimony in front of the Senate was, I would call, let me be generous, it was very, very nuanced, very stylized. I understand why these guys have to be careful, because they know that people are looking for a chance to pounce on something they say and say, you've just lied to Congress, which is a crime. So I get why you're going to be really, really careful in your words. I'm also the guy who still to this day says Bill Clinton's "it depends on what your definition of is defense" was fucking brilliant. So I really can't come down too hard on Barr without looking like a hypocrite. Having said that, it was painful to watch just in both directions.
Yeah. I mean, because there were a few instances where he was asked some direct questions that were yes or no. And he stumbled, and I guess the issue is Bill Clinton, when he was in the same position, didn't stumble, didn't really miss
a beat. Oh, no.
And you can make the argument, well, Bill Clinton was a lawyer, blah, blah, blah. But so is Barr.
He's sure.
Attorney General. So, I mean, you would think that he would be able to transition in and out of some of these questions just better, and he didn't look great doing it. And some of his responses were, I don't think they were as nuanced as you're giving him credit for. I think that they were just flat out bad.
Okay.
And I think that if he had those back, he would have answered them differently, which is why he opted out today, which I think is a big reason why he opted out today, because it just felt like at times he wasn't prepared. Right. Like, it felt like he was briefed on the Mueller report by an aide. Right. And they said, these are the key points. This is what you focus on in order to write your memo. Right. So then he does that. And then they're just like, all right, well, we want you to come in and testify on the memo that you wrote. You know, this little 4-page thing that covers something that's 400 pages. And then he basically wasn't ready to get in and dig into the details, you know, of his thought process. Again, maybe nuance, maybe lack of preparation, and or some sort of combination of both. And that's not uncommon. Like, we see that a lot in all levels of government, where, you know, someone who has to give a presentation or who has to speak is, you know, has someone else do the research, do the reading, do the digging. They brief him. Someone else even writes the report. He signs his name on it. He knows the key notes. And then it's just like, oh, yeah, by the way, this is dog shit. You need to come in and talk about it. And they have to hem and haw and give sort of, you know, dance around what the answers are. And it just it didn't look good.
I agree. There's an empty chair in front of the House of Representatives, and one of them placed a stuffed, not really stuffed, but a chicken in it. And one of the
one congressman had a bucket of KFC.
And I saw that as well. Which is really awful. I mean, even if I agree with the political side of where they're going, come on. You should not be in the House of Representatives munching on KFC as a way of saying the Attorney General is a chicken. I mean, come on. We're dumbing it down.
Yeah, and KFC is terrible. So
there's that. There's that. All right, so anyway, he's not going to testify. He's He dodged the issue of what he really read and didn't read.
So I'm sorry, Jim. A little bit of breaking news on our show.
Okay.
Facebook just banned Louis Farrakhan, Alex Jones, and a few other people known for being very inflammatory.
Okay. Interesting.
It's interesting because, I mean, Alex Jones is not a surprise. Louis Farrakhan had been flying under the radar, but, I mean, he's a guy who's been very inflammatory, especially when it comes to, you know, criticizing Jews, Israel, white people in general. And, you know, conservatives have been calling for a ban of Louis Farrakhan, considering the number of conservative people who have been banned from platforms right. like Twitter and things like that. So for Facebook to make this move, I think it's a olive branch to conservatives in a way to show that, hey, look, we're objective. But I think that, you know, Facebook is a little bit different than Twitter because Facebook isn't so much about banning people as it is about just, you know, selling everyone's information for, you know, any, you know, to the highest bidder.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, conservatives would be a lot happier if this was happening on Twitter. But it is an interesting move on their part.
Isn't Alex Jones already banned on Twitter? He is.
He is. Yeah, but this happened on Facebook.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I understand.
So what I'm saying is that conservatives would like to see Louis Farrakhan banned on Twitter.
Oh, okay. Not just Facebook.
Not just Facebook.
Gotcha.
Anyway, I thought that was interesting. We can move on.
No, it's fine. It is interesting, and it's weird to me
breaking
news from Mexico. So what's interesting to me about it, though, is Facebook is not like the other things in the sense that you don't if you don't follow someone, never mind. I'm not going to go down that road. But Facebook, to me, is more like a what you do with your friends and family, whereas Twitter is where the real trolling and stupid stuff happens. And Facebook, you're typically arguing with people you know. Not that that makes it better in all occasions. So Rod Rosenstein's going to step down as deputy attorney general. That's not a shocker to me. I don't think it's a shocker to anyone, right? I mean, he was the face of the who's keeping, you know, a leash on Mueller. One other important thing to say, that by the way, is Joe Biden and many other Democrats are calling for Barr to step down or be impeached. And Nancy Pelosi, who has been very adamant that they're not going to try to impeach the president, has said that Barr lied to Congress and cited a few examples. And one of those examples was apparently Mueller wrote a letter to Barr after his four-page memo came out expressing his displeasure with how the memo represented his report. And Barr basically denied that that conversation took place and then later acknowledged it did. So I don't know. I think trying to impeach Barr would be a political stunt that I think would backfire.
So here's the thing that's starting to come up, right? Like, so I think the Trump administration as a whole has found this really interesting place where they exist in, you know, like, listen, we're gonna come right up to the line. We're gonna dance on that line. Our toes may go an inch or so over that line, and you know, we may tell partial truths about it, and you know, we'll say various things in the media. They'll call for impeachment, but the response is gonna be from any sensible person who, you know, can meet in the middle. Is, you know, impeachment is a bad move. It's a bad look. We don't have the numbers for it. You know, you've got Democrats in control of Congress, but, you know, the Senate is, you know, controlled by Republicans, and the White House is, you know, controlled by Trump and Pence. So, you know, it's just an interesting niche where, I mean, like, I think some of the stuff they do on purpose, like they say these things, they do these things, you know, especially lately over the last year, knowing that the legality is vague, right?
Okay.
And yet they also know that they're in a – can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, I was just stretching. Go ahead. I can hear you just fine. Can you not hear me? We are experiencing technical difficulties, folks. Go.
Okay, sorry about that, folks. We had some technical difficulties, as Jim said. You know, the downside of doing the podcast in remote locations with pretty good Wi-Fi, but not perfect. So, you know, as I was saying, I think that, you know, the Trump administration may be on to something where they pull some of these stunts that, you know, butt up against the line of legality. And they know that they've got the court of public opinion to a degree on their side, in that, you know, they've got their base, right? Like, you've got the MAGA faithful. And then at the same time, you have other people who will say, if you go down the road of impeachment, you don't have the Senate and you could have problems, right? And so that's kind of the yeah. line in the sand that they'll continue to come right up to, you know, nothing, and they won't do anything so egregious that even Republicans find it repugnant enough to say, all right, we got to get this guy out. But whether it's Trump or, in this case, Barr, or, you know, whoever is, you know, answerable, whoever has to answer to Congress, you know, which is not Stephen Miller, by the way, which is right. interesting. But, you know, whoever had to be confirmed, who then becomes, who has to answer to Congress and the Senate, you know, some of their behavior, I think, is intentional, right? Because they know that they're in this situation where, yeah, maybe it's somewhat sketchy behavior, but since, you know, Democrats don't have the numbers to really do anything, everything that they do is going to be considered a dog and pony show. So we'll go right up to the line, we'll bend the rules, and what are they going to do about it?
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, it's nothing new, but the partisan politics of this, and Trump even came out and said that, you know, everyone who's running for president and had a chance to question this guy is, you know, call it unfair or whatever. I don't remember his exact quote.
Well, anything that is negative against him, right,
is unfair.
Or his administration is unfair or illegal.
Right. So a couple of things. Do we want to talk about Trump now, or are we done with Barr?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're done with Barr. I mean, the testimony was what it was. He's not testifying today. I don't think that a lot was gleaned from it. I think if you're a Democrat, you didn't have any faith in Barr to begin with, and you have even less faith in him now that he's an objective attorney general. You're probably calling for his impeachment, removal, resignation, and you think that he's a puppet for the president. And if you're a Trump supporter, you think that Barr is a masterful, nuanced attorney general who outsmarted the Democrats and is doing his job better than Eric Holder did his job. And you're probably saying, you know, you've probably tweeted or put something on Facebook dealing with the Fast and Furious issue that happened under the Obama administration.
Fox was talking about that today. In fact, one of the members on the Fox show, Outnumbered, was saying that he was in favor of going after Holder, and he feels that the same should apply to Barr. So that was a Fox News person. But my thought about going after Barr is, even my biggest concern is who comes next. I mean, as much as I'm not a fan of William Barr, I was really not a fan of his predecessor, Jeff Sessions. And who knows? I mean, if Trump is asked to nominate a new attorney general, he's going to go as far, you know, anti-immigrant right wing as he possibly can. And I just assume leave it be. I think we're dealing with the devil we know right now. And I think that's the way to go. Even though I do agree with Democrats that Barr is definitely showing a great deal of loyalty to Trump. So Trump is now.
Yeah, I mean, I think Democrats need to be careful there. I mean, if it's about party loyalty, then, you know, I mean, the Fast and Furious situation. Sorry, that's a little. We travel by golf cart on this resort. And they're gas powered, so they're kind of loud. But you got to be careful if you're a Democrat or even Eric Holder himself. I mean, that Fast and Furious situation was a debacle. Congress investigated, he didn't, you know, he wasn't aware of what was going on until probably, you know, a couple years into it after the worst things had happened. But it was still happened under his watch. And, you know, he put up a lot of roadblocks into Congress investigating what really happened there. And eventually the Obama administration released the documents that, you know, kind of gave an explanation as to what the hell happened. And it was a mess. I mean, just to sum it up real quick, the ATF had basically an operation where they would let guns be bought illegally by people who were straw men or middlemen for these Mexican cartels. They would go in, you know, so they would get someone who's legally able to buy guns, but who had known affiliations with Mexican cartels. They would go in, buy the guns, take the guns, and the guns would end up in these Mexican cartels. And then the guns, like, were basically lost in Mexico.
Right.
Like, they're like, all right, we're going to track them. And then, like, they tracked them out of the parking lot, and then they lost them. And then the guns ended up being responsible for the death of a Border Patrol agent and an ICE agent. And the question is, like, all right, so what was the point of all this? Now, what usually doesn't get said is that eventually, you know, everyone that they believe was responsible for these two murders, those people were caught, apprehended, arrested, and sentenced to, you know, long prison sentences. And even the straw men in some of these instances were arrested and sentenced to jail. And some of the guns were recovered, but I mean, they allowed 2,000 guns to be bought illegally, and they only recovered a few hundred. So there's a lot of questions about that, about why that was a good idea, you know, like from the beginning, why that was a good idea. And then the execution was just awful.
Right.
So I have no issue with going, like, at least getting more information out of, you know, Eric Holder and the ATF as to what the fuck happened there. I know a couple people resigned and were fired, but I mean, two people died because of this terrible fucking plan. And I just think, you know, we can't be so partisan as to look at Eric Holder as just this great guy. You know, like,
right,
the whole Obama administration was great, and there were no
fuck ups.
Like, this is that was bad. So
yeah. I agree. So yeah, Rosenstein stepping down comes as a surprise to nobody, and really doesn't impact much, as he was the number two guy anyway, and it's clear that Barr has taken up that mantle. Trump is suing Deutsche Bank, by the way. He's suing Deutsche Bank to prevent them from releasing subpoenaed financial records, which I find fascinating. I mean, yep.
And, you know, you have long contended that Trump isn't as rich as he says he is.
Yes.
I still think that he's probably worth about $1 billion, which is still insanely rich. But, I
right.
mean, you know, he's not up there with you know,
Jerry Jones,
Warren Buffett, or even Jerry Jones. And so I saw, by the way,
okay,
and I think about that only because Jerry Jones has a $250 million yacht. But, you know, Trump owes some money to Deutsche Bank, and you know, he doesn't want his financials to get out there. On the one hand, I can understand. I mean, having known some really, really wealthy people coming from Youngstown, which sounds odd, sounds almost like an oxymoron, but trust me, there's a couple there. There's a lot of wealthy people in this country who pay a lot of money so that their financial information does not get out there. So on the one hand, I understand it, but once you step into the public sector, right, as a public servant, as a public official, right, and now he's the president, the top public official, that sort of veil of secrecy needs to go away. So while I understand why he's doing it, and I get why he's fighting it, I think it's a bad precedent to allow that to happen. Like, if you want to run for president, like, guess what? You wanted to buy an NFL team and they wanted to know what your money was really about, you want to fucking run a country, then we want to know what your money is really about. Sorry, that's just the way it goes. And if you don't like it, you can fight it. But I don't think you should be allowed to win on that front. Personally, I think all it's going to show is that he's just not worth as much as he says he is, which would be a major blow to his ego, which we know is easy to impact. But I don't know if it's going to show everyone the the forensic data that's going to take him down.
No, I don't think it would. And even if it did, it would take too long for it to happen. We're going to be at 2020 before anything legally would happen. But the fact that he's fighting the release of those records, to me, is telling. And you know I hate about, well, what about your guy arguments? But it's hard for me not to think, like, if I wouldn't even say Obama, if Bill Clinton were to, or Hillary Clinton would have been elected and sued something from getting released after it was court ordered, I think there would be some uproar from the other side, and I'll just leave it at that.
Well, there was. I mean, there were instances where, I mean, with the what was that, Whitewater scandal? You know, there was a lot of pushback from Clinton and his team for a lot of that information to not get out, which is kind of what led us to the whole impeachment thing, which led us to the process of
right. Well, it led to him lying about getting a blowjob is what it did.
Yes. Even just talking about that Fast and Furious thing, I mean, Obama stepped in and, you know, issued executive privilege or whatever to prevent those documents from getting out about Fast and Furious. Now, he eventually ended up letting them out. But part of it is just about slow playing the process, right? I mean, Trump doesn't want the info out, but if he can slow play it as long as possible and get things tied up in courts, you know, until after 2020, then, you know, he's going to do whatever he has to, right? I mean, I think you're going to see him and people in his organization suing a lot of people to tie things up in court, to slow things down, to prevent information coming out prior to the 2020 election.
Right. I agree. And then another thing, and I don't know if you caught this or not, but Alec Baldwin went on some, I think it was an MSNBC show, but I don't remember what show it was, so I don't want to state that as fact. And he made a comment about, you know, Trump fooling all the folks in flyover country or something to that effect. And that, to me, is part of the reason why Democrats are losing middle America. Because I like Alec Baldwin as an actor, and I thought his epic meltdown years ago was fucking hilarious. But and he does a great job impersonating Trump, so I understand why they talk to him. But a lot of what made Trump successful was pinning you in the Midwest, you in the small towns, against the Hollywood and East Coast elites. And then Alec Baldwin, who could not embody that more, comes out and says that. Now, he immediately backtracked, but too late, Alec. They got the soundbite. That's all they need. So I think bad move, Mr. Baldwin.
Yeah, I mean, here's the problem. I mean, you know, MSNBC, CNN, they keep going to people like Alec Baldwin and Alyssa Milano, and they keep going to these people in Hollywood who just, you know, I mean, they're not, I mean, I get, they keep going to these people and then giving them a platform to say whatever it is they want to say, knowing that it's going to be anti-Trump, it's going to be very progressive left-leaning from a political standpoint, social standpoint, and they're just completely tone-deaf to the fact that middle America is a little bit more conservative, whether it's Ohio or Missouri or Montana or whatever it might be, and that the politics are different, and that not everybody thinks, not like, just because Alec Baldwin says it doesn't mean shit. You know, I mean, it may mean a lot to people in New York, you know, the people who want his money and want his business, you know, and the same thing with, you know, people on the West Coast, but to the people in the middle, not so much.
Well, and nobody likes being called stupid. So when you paint someone as stupid, that doesn't help your cause. So anyway, Alec Baldwin, that's the sort of thing that should be happening on Colbert. Yeah, that'll still get the news, but I have no problem with celebrities voicing their political decisions or positions on either side. Having said that,
and you know what? Hold on. It wouldn't be as bad as if there were more celebrities that just had not even necessarily an opposing point of view to the progressive far left ideology, but if there was just someone, you know, who, what, like, if there was a conservative or an independent, you know, Hollywood person or group that came out and just said, hey, you know, we're not too far one way or the other, or maybe we are to the right, but they weren't obnoxious about it.
So they're not, I mean, James Woods.
Right. Well, that's just the thing. Like, it just seems like in Hollywood, like, it's either you're, you know, it's Captain Extreme one way or the other. And it would be nice if there were just more sensible people that said, like, if, and I don't know what Matthew McConaughey's politics are, except for having a good time down at the University of Texas, but, you know, somebody like Matthew McConaughey just came out and said, you know, like, I'm pro-America, and, you know, what happens to, you know, minorities and police is wrong, and you know, but I'm not comfortable with the immigration situation right now, and whatever, just had more of a independent, objective point of view, I guess.
Yeah, you know, Steve, I'm sure those people exist, but they also don't get airtime, right?
True.
No one.
True.
That doesn't make Matthew McConaughey.
You know what? They all show up to these fancy Hollywood events. Like, I mean, take the opportunity to, you know, get your voice out there.
You know, I think people with that mindset.
If they even care, I mean, listen, if I were Matthew McConaughey or whoever, I don't know why he even came to mind, but if I were that person, I guess, I don't know, would I be that worried about it? Like, if I lived in places like this all the time, would I be going out of my way to get on MSNBC to talk about anything? Probably not. Probably. So, I mean, maybe that's the answer right there.
Okay, I agree. And again, I think those people with that mentality generally are like, I don't really want to be thought of as a political activist, so they stay away.
Yeah.
All right, so as messed up as things might be with our politics, we are smooth sailing compared to what's going on in Venezuela. Venezuela is a fucking mess. Maduro has basically said, you know, that the people opposing us are against the people of Venezuela, and he's threatening to use the military directly against his own citizens. People are knocking down barriers outside of government buildings. It's scary.
Yeah, I mean, it is scary. You know, it's really unfortunate for those people living there. You know, a lot of those people are just caught in the middle, you know, just trying to exist, and this thing is going on. It's so incredibly destructive. Now, you know, every conservative is saying, see, this is what socialism gets you. And I would push back and say, no, this is what a fucking dictator gets
you. A military dictatorship gets you, yeah.
Right. Like, this is a military dictatorship, and you can blame socialism, but the same shit could happen here. Like, listen, you put someone in, like, I mean, Trump, and Trump is in office, so I'm using him. I'm not saying Trump will or would do this. But the president of the United States could flip out, and like everyone talks about our institutions and how they're infallible. It's bullshit, right? Because they're all, it's pieces of paper and humans, right? So you get a person in there who has control of the military and then decides that he's just like, you know what? I'm not leaving the White House. Come make me. And I got, you know what I mean? And
right.
Some of these military people, and the question is, as long as the other, like, at that point in time, you're relying on the military people to make the right decisions. But if they don't make the right decisions and they side with the president, they can easily turn this place into a banana republic, and it would be a fucking mess.
I mean,
because there are certain people who want that, right? Like, there are small factions of people who would love to see that happen in this country. And then if it started at the top with the president and even a small percentage of the military, it would completely destabilize the United States. Right. Let's not joke around about, oh, well, we're completely infallible because of our systems. Like, listen, I mean, you got small inner cities that are practically like war zones already.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, like, let's not act like we're just this perfect haven of this is why capitalism works. Like, yeah, it works pretty good most of the time, but that's because we haven't had anybody in power who really wanted to flip shit on its head.
Well, I would argue we also have a fair bit of socialism in our country, and people just don't like to acknowledge it. That has become the Fox News calling card of if a socialist like Bernie is elected, you'll be eating rats like the citizens of Venezuela. But just on a purely human purely human perspective, I don't know what we can do as the United States can do about it. Certainly sending our military in there is not an option I like.
There's arguments that we're partially responsible for this.
I think we're very largely responsible for it.
Right. I mean, and we do share a fair amount of responsibility. Like the question is, like the guy opposing Maduro, where did he come from? You know, who found him and who decided that he needs to be the opposition leader? And that arrow points directly at the United States and the Trump administration. And what we know, this country has a really bad history of, you know, removing a dictator, putting in someone else, and having it go completely sideways. You know, I mean, and I don't see any sort of relief or reprieve of this, no matter what happens, whether Maduro stays in power or, you know, Guaido replaces him. It's not going to go good, right? I mean, it ends terribly almost no matter what.
But there's no way the U.S. should get involved without massive international support. Like, basically every neighboring country to Venezuela and all of NATO and without massive international support, we just can't do this shit anymore. It doesn't work. I got nothing more to say about it. Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you remember what Trump campaigned on, you know, the real question will be, you know, remember, he wants to pull us out of these, you know, foreign conflicts and you know, America first. So if he sends troops down to Venezuela to overthrow Maduro or whatever, then the question is that going back on a campaign promise?
Yeah, but I mean, his promises don't really mean anything. And while he has not done a great job of getting us out of foreign conflicts, in principle, that's something I agree with him on. We would be much better off.
I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I mean, as you know, I mean, if he campaigned on we're not going to do this anymore, and then you know
he opens up a new one, yeah,
and we do it, then I don't know. You know, is that something that he gets called a task for? I mean, probably not. I'm sure you know people on the left will, but again, his base will ignore it, and it won't really result in any sort of harm that comes to him in terms of polling or electability. So it's almost kind of like it's not a point it's not a point, you know,
right.
It doesn't matter.
I want to completely switch gears because something you and I have talked about in the past has seen a lot of change. And this actually, again, kind of the current administration deserves credit for it. You and I have both been using CBD for some time. I think it helps me sleep and helps me feel better. And it was a weird thing in Ohio because the Ohio Board of Pharmacy said CBD is not legal and you'll be prosecuted if you use or sell it. Some places followed that, some places didn't because who's the Ohio Board of Pharmacy to try to be a law enforcement agency? But the 2018 Federal Farm Bill legalized hemp. CBD is now all over the place in Ohio. In fact, the one store near where you live that used to say we won't sell that because we don't want to risk our business is now selling it. And in fact, I bought some from them yesterday when I went and retrieved your hoodie.
Thanks for that, by the way.
No problem. I got a thing from Bed Bath & Beyond, you know, typical Bed Bath & Beyond flyer. And back of the magazine has a coupon that all of them have. And they're selling CBD at Bed Bath & Beyond now. So that's, yeah, I mean, that's as mainstream as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's hemp derived, it's under 0.03 THC level, and it is not promoted as like a health supplement.
Right.
Then yeah, you can sell it. So I mean, I think good. The more, the merrier. I mean, I think, but the reality is, the key is you got to get marijuana, cannabis, weed, ganja, whatever you want to call it. We got to get it deschedulized. We got to get it legalized. And then we have to look at, you know, looking back to the number of people that have, you know, criminal records because of it and their lives completely turned upside down. You know, we need to address that as well. So while it's good, and I think CBD definitely has some positive impacts. Again, I use it to help me sleep. I use it for, you know, just joint health and over, you know, and inflammation. But really, I mean, you want the big guns and that's cannabis and we got a ways to go on that.
Yeah, we got a ways to go, but this is an actual, viable step in that direction, I think. And, it also, to me, it gets rid of the stigma and the stupidity because there were stories, and I heard one out of, I think, rural Ohio, one out of rural Kentucky, where sheriffs were doing SWAT raids on, vape shops that were selling CBD, even though
Yeah, I mean, I disagree there. I mean, I think the stigma and the stupidity is going to exist, period. Even when it's legalized, you're gonna have stigma, you're gonna have stupidity, you're gonna have those various law enforcement agents who are pissed about it and, you know, want it to be criminalized again and that are gonna advocate against it. You know, I mean, people who are against it are against it. You know, I think you'll see some change a little bit, but I mean, the key is in education, and if people don't want to learn about it because they have their minds made up, they do. And the real key is the main group of people that we need to get over it, to get over the hump, are lawmakers, state and federal.
Right. And in the case of CBD, you know, they
else,
did that.
I don't give a shit about, but lawmakers, state and federal, those are the ones that even whether they know about it or not, we just need them to vote the right way, basically. But that ultimately comes with education or money from lobbyists.
Right. Well, but the reason I'm calling this progress and why I'm obviously more encouraged by this than you are is whether you think THC-containing cannabis should be legal or not, we can debate that for hours, and we end up on the same page there, so it's really not worth it. But the fact that hemp and CBD were illegal was fucking ridiculous. It's a non-psychoactive plant, period. And it took 100 years for the government to finally move on it, and they did. So seeing a 100-year-old dumb law get reversed, I'm call me Mr., you know, Mr. Optimist, but I'm very encouraged by that, and to see it go as mainstream as Bed Bath & Beyond within a year of that ban ending, I think is also very encouraging.
I will join you in that level of encouragement when they legalize marijuana.
Okay.
Or Canada.
All right. So, you and I had we've engaged in Twitter battles with others before. I think this is the first time we've had an inter-Whiskey Congress Twitter battle over something that matters more to most Americans than the shit we were talking about before, Game of Thrones. So I've been criticizing Game of Thrones. I'm not saying I'm not enjoying it. I'm saying it's lost its grit. It's lost its edge. It feels more like a Lord of the Rings movie, an R-rated Lord of the Rings movie, than its old self. And I put that down there on our Twitter account. I got a lot of likes. I got a lot of criticism. Some of that came from you.
Interesting when you go back and look at the people who liked it, who they are, and what they represent on Twitter, but that's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, you clearly disagree with me.
If that's what you think, that's fine. I think part of me, that is the... I can't, like, without attacking you,
Go ahead.
It's just the, I'm going to be a contrarian. Like, if people are liking it, I can't like it too much. It's the, I liked this song before it was popular. Now it's popular. I don't like it. It's that mentality. And that's so fucking played. Like, just fucking enjoy it.
But
no one gives a shit that you are a wannabe movie critic. Like, just fucking enjoy it. If you're enjoying it, enjoy it. If not, don't fucking watch it. I don't understand what's so fucking hard about that. Or take your shit and go to fucking Reddit.
No, I'm staying on Twitter. I'm saying what I'm saying. I stand by what I say. And again,
you can stand by it. I mean,
I'm not being hipster.
You got
I like
five
to
likes from you know some fucking basement dweller. Congratulations.
Okay, I don't know how many I got. I think it was more than that, but. All right, so this is actually on a political ramification. I am criticizing something that I genuinely like. I'm criticizing it based on my perception. I'm not the book is much better guy because I've read like two paragraphs of the books once. And I'm not saying, oh, it's awful. You know, I'm not trying to be an amateur movie critic. I'm taking something that I've been really invested in.
So what are you saying? That you predicted that spoiler alert, if you haven't seen...
All right, yeah, stop listening.
Episode 3, then stop listening right now. But if you have, then keep listening. So what are you saying? That you predicted everything that was going to happen?
No. I'm saying the style of it. Old Game of Thrones would not have had the ending where everything's about to end, and then Arya flies in, does the dipsy do with the knife drop, and stabs the Night King in the leg.
What are you talking about? What are you talking? Old Game of Thrones wouldn't have had that.
No, it wouldn't have been. It wouldn't have been so Lord of the Rings like. Hero
what
with the
Lord of the Rings have to do with it?
Yeah, because that's what the feel it gives.
It's set in the fantasy time. And
exactly. And one of them was a different animal before, and it's becoming the mainstream thing. And
that's a bullshit take. I mean, only because like Lord of the Rings had to do with old timey magical shit. Like, that's your only comparison. Like,
all right. It's the same. I would say the same thing about the Avengers, but I haven't seen the new movie yet. But it's that same. What is a Hollywood standard script, and what is a great novel getting turned into screen? And I think that has happened and flipped.
And I can make the argument that they have been telling you that Arya Stark was going to do this the entire existence. Like, that's what she's been training for this entire time.
Okay, and I'm fine with. Let's get away from Arya Stark. I've got a prediction for you, and if this prediction comes true, we can talk about it on the next show. But, and again, spoiler if you haven't seen it. Ghost, the wolf, running alongside the Dothraki as they were charging into the initial fight. I've seen tons of stuff on Facebook and Twitter where people care more about Ghost, the white wolf, than they do about most of the people. So animal lovers are all up in arms about what's happening with Ghost. And I predict at the end of next episode, Ghost will turn up alive and crowds will cheer. And that will be your standard Hollywood, tie everything into a bow, wrap it up, and hand it to us, and not have that edge it had before. There's my prediction. Would you agree that would...
That's so far off the beaten path. They only had fucking, six episodes for this season? So
right.
I doubt
three to go.
Waste any time on the wolf.
If they do, will you acknowledge that my criticism is founded?
Yeah, I guess they do, but, I mean, it's not. And I think that, I mean... If they do, then okay, fine. I'm still not exactly sure what your point is. I mean, I guess it's too Hollywood for you, but I think there's going to be something way bigger that happens in the next. I think ultimately this comes to a head with. There's a pretty big clue that's dropped in there with the red woman or the red lady or the
right
red,
who's dead
goddess red lady killed herself. Because if you go back to whatever season it was when Arya was still a little girl, you know, she's like, I see death in your eyes, and you're going to kill him with brown eyes, blue eyes, and green eyes, right? And so she killed the ones with the blue eyes, she killed the ones with the brown eyes, and the question is, who's left with green eyes? And that's Sansa.
Okay. Okay. Hold on one second, okay, Steve?
Yep.
All right, so there were some technical difficulties on my end of that time, but they're resolved. And we're going to agree to disagree here. I just think from a bigger picture standpoint, though, all right, you don't like my opinion? Fine. The idea that if I'm not 100% on board that I'm the bad guy, that kind of is where our political problems are, right? If you're not purely on one team, then you're on the other. And I'm saying that the vibe is switched and I'm not happy about it, but I've ridden this train for 7 seasons and I'm not quitting now. And I hope, and my hope is that I end up being proven wrong and they don't make it all cheesy and, Ghost comes back.
This is where I will agree with you. If this ends and Daenerys is made queen of the Seven Kingdoms and a ruler of the Seven Kingdoms or whatever,
and
then I'll definitely be disappointed.
And Jon Snow is by her side and everyone lives happily ever after.
Yeah, like that will actually suck. But if this, like, if Daenerys ends up being driven by power, and what I would love to see, Jon Snow ends up having to kill Daenerys because she tries to kill him because he's got a claim to the throne, and something happens with Sansa and Arya, or maybe just Arya takes out. I mean, I think it's a little too Hollywood if Arya ends up picking out. What's Cersei, but I would like to see it. And so it's also okay if things we would like to happen in the things that we choose are entertainment for them. Right. Like, I mean, what is that? Is that vibration coming from you?
I've been even thinking about my headphones, but I don't know why, cause I'm not using them. So,
I
got to point out one more cheesy Hollywood moment though. When Dany blasts the Night King with dragon fire from point blank range, and he walks through it and then smiles at her. I'm like, okay, the Night King is now fireproof. Okay,
but according to you, if it was a true Hollywood moment, he would have melted and died and that would have been the end.
No, the fact that he walks out smirking and then they create the everything's about to end until...
Okay. I mean, but now, like, so you don't have a standard, you don't have a bar. Like, that's just, it's just your...
It's my opinion.
It's just your opinion.
Right.
Fine, and, like, it's your... Here's the thing. You're allowed to have an opinion, and I'm allowed to tell you it's a shitty one.
Fair. That's fine. I'm fine with that. And we can do it on Twitter and watch people... threatening to block my ability to use our Twitter, by the way, that is a form of censorship.
I said... What did I say?
You said you're tempted to. Yeah. All right. All right. Before we... Speaking of Hollywood, before we get going... some bad news out of Hollywood. At age, I believe, 51, director John Singleton died. Best known for Boys in the Hood, which was a fantastic movie. I remember talking to you about one of his other movies, the movie Higher Learning, which, in my opinion, was not a fantastic movie. But
it was a great movie, but it was so... I mean, he was so young. He was only 22 when he wrote Boys... He wrote and directed Boys in the Hood, and he was only 22 or 23 years old. And that movie has such an impact. I mean, it really kind of catapulted Ice Cube and Cuba Gooding Jr. into the spotlight.
Sure.
You know, I mean, and those guys kind of took off running and, you know, never really looked back.
It was also, I think, the first time a mainstream movie gave mostly white people a view of what life was like in... You know, South Central Los Angeles in that era, right?
Yeah.
White neighborhoods didn't show movies that depicted that, if they even existed in any kind of quality. This was the first really high quality, really well acted, really well directed movie that showed a lot of people, including me. I mean, that movie came out, I want to say it would have been 88, 89, somewhere in there. Maybe 90. But
Boys in the Hood was like 90, 91.
Okay. So I was a freshman or sophomore in college.
If John Singleton was 51 when he died, and he was 22 when he wrote and directed that movie, so just go back, then I think it was 91, 92 that movie.
29 years would make it 1990, so okay. Somewhere there. But it was, you know, for me, I mean, I had been in the hood in Buffalo, like, driving-wise, but I had never... interacted in the hood in Buffalo, and you know, to see that movie done that well and to see it in such a mainstream way, and I think he was the youngest director ever nominated for Best Director, and I think he was the first first black person nominated for Best Director. So he was a mover and a shaker, and I guess he had a stroke and went into a coma, and they pulled the plug on him, and I'm sad.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, and he, you know, I think a lot of black act directors and producers feel obligated to help, you know, young black actors get their start or get a chance because it's just hard. I mean, yeah, people always point to, oh, I saw this movie and there was a black person. And it's like, yeah, there was a black person or there were three black people, but 90% of the cast was white, right? Like, so you think that's equality because you've seen one or two black people in a movie, you know, or there's one or two black shows, but a majority of the shows are casts that are 99% white, right? And then people get mad when they sprinkle in a black guy, an Asian and Hispanic, and like, oh, they got to do that for diversity, blah, 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 blah. Why can't, you know, whatever. And so... You know, you have these black directors who, like, I mean, like, you know, Jordan Peele, who's just like, listen, I'm going to use a predominantly black cast because that's what white directors do. You know, they use predominantly white cast. You know, and a lot of people take offense to that, and they said, oh, if it was the other way around, like, it is the other way around.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, that's just what it is. And when you see a movie that's a predominantly black cast, guess what it's about? It's about fucking slavery or the hood, right? Like, I mean, so,
true.
You know, or something from the Jim Crow civil rights era. And so I think where John Singleton comes into play there is that he was really one of the first directors to you know, just openly say, I'm going to talk about black issues and I'm not going to portray all black people as thugs or gangsters or slaves or maids. or right, we're just going to talk about what black people are in real life, in their day to day. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. And, you know, you have to say that a Jordan Peele, that's where he gets his inspiration from. You know, that's where you're able to get movies like Get Out and Us, which I don't know if I'll see Us or not because I'm
not a fan of the horror movies.
Right. But, you know, I mean, it's a sad loss.
Yeah.
And what I feel bad about is that I don't think a lot of people listening actually truly will feel the impact of that loss. You know, but hopefully that maybe this kind of sparks some interest and they go back and they look at some of the other movies that he did. You know, Higher Learning wasn't a great movie, but it was still, an interesting movie.
It was entertaining. It just tried to do too damn much.
Okay,
I mean,
okay, movie critic guy. Here you go. Also, you know, there's also Baby Boy, and you know, there were a couple others. So, I mean, you know, if you get a chance, maybe check out a few John Singleton movies. Other, you know, Boys in the Hood. If you haven't seen it, see it. And then, you know, a few others just to kind of get a feel. And then maybe go check out Jordan Peele's movies and see what he's about and see what those themes are and see kind of how they're just, you know, they're different than the typical black movies you see that are either biopics about, you know, someone in history. They're about slavery. They're about the civil rights movement or something along those lines. And these movies are just different.
Yeah. Like I said, from my personal experience, it was the first movie that showed a part of the culture in the country I live in that I was not. I think I learned something from that movie that, you know, people always criticize. If you try to get your reality from movies, you're doing yourself a disservice. But sometimes movies do speak to real life very well, and that's an example of it, in my opinion.
I mean, listen, I experienced Boys in the Hood firsthand, man. There was a local guy from Youngstown who played at Youngstown State University. He was a linebacker. He was exceptionally good. He was one of those guys that really developed later in his football playing career. You know, he was a decent enough student, and then you know, he had NFL talent. He was probably going to be drafted out of Youngstown State, and then he ends up being murdered on his front lawn in a drive-by. You know, not too far from where I lived, you know, four blocks over. And it just, I mean, it hit the whole town because, you know, we were a place where there was a lot of football talent, but guys didn't make it out because for so many different reasons, right? Like for these type of reasons. And he was one, he was so close to making it out and his life was cut short. You know, during a drive-by. So, you know,
this guy older than you or younger than you?
Older. So, older. I mean, I was in, and I'm having trouble remembering his name because I mean, I think I was like, this is shortly at, this was like a year after Boys in the Hood. This is like '93.
Okay.
I was still in junior high when this happened. Early. This is either sixth or seventh grade.
So there's. I'm sorry.
What's that?
I was going to say, knowing you and knowing Youngstown, probably someone that you looked up to, right? You probably heard about him all the time because high school football is so big there.
I spent a lot of time at the YSU football camps, and I spent a lot of time with Jim Tressel and his staff and the players, and you know, you did grow fond of those guys. You know, one of my attorney mentors is a guy who played on those Jim Tressel teams. He also went to my high school. He played on that Jim Tressel team and he kind of took me under his wing when I went to law school. I spent a summer going back to Youngstown and working with him on small business mergers and acquisitions. So, you know, Youngstown is a small, tight-knit community. And so when you lose a guy in such an awful way, when you lose anyone, it hurts. But when you lose someone who is so promising in an awful way, it really hits home. And it's hard for me to watch Boys in the Hood just because that scenario played out almost exactly. You know, almost exactly. You know, he was killed, and I remember not even a week later, there was a violent shootout that was said to be in retaliation for his murder. And, you know, his family members kind of went a couple of different ways. There was a suicide. There was, you know, another violent gang death, and then someone went on to be, you know, pretty productive. But I mean, that's a cycle in the hood, and I mean, hopefully it's changing, but the reality is, like, we got a long way to go.
Yep, I agree. And again, John Singleton put it on film as well as anyone's ever done it. So rest in peace, John Singleton. And anything else you want to talk about before you go have another Corona and enjoy the sun?
No, I mean, I think we should tell people that this episode was done via FaceTime. So
okay.
Jim's had the pleasure of not only seeing my view of the Laguna and the ocean and the palm trees, but when the camera's facing me, seeing me shirtless. So,
yeah. And
you're welcome.
Yeah. No, thank you offered. But anyway, I'm glad you're having a good trip, brother. There's the view. There's the view again.
There it is.
Yeah, that's better. Glad you're having a good trip, and look forward to you getting home. And this will get released on Sunday. We'll see if my Game of Thrones prediction comes true. And
hold on. What was your prediction again?
Ghost the Wolf will appear unscathed and be reunited with one of the Starks. And it'll be one of those, and people will get on Facebook and be like, oh, Ghost is okay. And I'll be like, yeah, and whatever.
Okay, I mean, I think that's so nitpicky. I mean, because, but if it's preceded by Jon Snow killing Sansa, then I think that outweighs the dog wolf living, right? Or no, or are you just so, or are you just so worried about, like, I mean, like, that's the thing, like, it's fucking Hollywood, Jim. It is Hollywood.
Here's where I'm drawing my line in the sand. I agree, it's Hollywood. And Hollywood has made lots of things I've genuinely enjoyed, including The Lord of the Rings, except for the final 40 minutes of the last one. But it's that need to wrap everything up in a tight little bow and make it all perfect that Hollywood typically did, that Game of Thrones didn't. And it's not just about main characters dying, although that's definitely something that Game of Thrones has been very aggressive with. It's about just the feel, like, this last one, so much of it was just nonstop action and special effects. Fine. But the
I'm sorry you had to put up with that.
No, everyone's complaining that it was too damn dark, not meaning dark in
it was
too damn dark.
And I found out why. Because they shot it on these cameras that, like, they were beyond 4K, and I don't understand. It's like, listen, I barely understand shooting anything in 4K because no one's got a 4K TV. I have a 4K TV. Do you?
I do not. Look at you, Mr. Look at you bragging about
else that I know. Well, I'm not bragging. The only reason I have it because I bought my TV from a friend who works at Best Buy who got me a deal on it, and we won't get into the details of that.
Yes, let's...
He's a guy from the gym who's got an interesting past, and he got a job at Best Buy, and I got a nice TV. Period.
I would like to know nothing more about this in the event that one day I'm in front of Congress.
I would say nothing more about it on the show. But what I'm saying is, like, so it was shot in this ridiculous pixel level amount that no one has a TV really capable of seeing. And the TV I have here, Cabo, is actually really nice. It's brand new. The villa that I'm staying in was just built. So the TV here is really nice. It's a 4K TV. Even on that fucking TV, I watched it a second time, adjusted, like, the brightness and contrast and all that shit. I could see it a little bit better.
I did the same thing.
They just shot it on a camera that, like no one has a TV. Like, I don't even know what their thought process was. Why do you have cameras that can do that if you don't have a receiver that can actually project it?
I'm of the...
Like, I thought that would be your bigger complaint. I mean, I still don't even understand what your complaint was at the end of it, considering if you watch the show consistently enough, they had dropped breadcrumbs all along that kind of led you along this path, and this was something different that they had done, and I think that was actually good. I enjoyed the fact that normally they leave you with this crazy cliffhanger, and now they've kind of resolved that issue, but you still have a pretty serious issue in King's Landing.
Oh, sure.
With Cersei's crazy ass and what's going on with her and the dude who's knocking her up and everything else, considering she sent her brother there to die. Like, I mean, I think there's still plenty of plot left. I think you're overanalyzing it for the sake of overanalyzing, and then getting defensive over when 99% of the people who watch the show are just like, chill.
I don't think I'm being defensive. I'm standing my ground. Look, there have been a lot of shows that I've absolutely loved that fucked it up at the end. Dexter was great and finished horribly. Californication was great. And then the final season of Californication, if you ever get to it, I've warned you that I'm not taking responsibility for that. I recommended the show. I will tell you what happens in season 7 and spare you the awfulness of what that final season was. And this was one of my favorite shows of all time. I'm not saying it's one of the best of all times. I just happen to love it, meaning Californication. Game of Thrones, and to me, is... What's that?
I said, and Californication is very good. I'm not far enough along.
Right, right. And Game of Thrones is one of my favorite shows of all time, and I do not want it to suffer the same fate. That's all I'm saying. Well, I actually wrote an article the night of the show, and I wrote it in Word, and I haven't posted it yet, but it may well happen.
Post that shit.
Okay.
Post it before the episode.
Okay. I need to prove. I wrote it after the episode. My wine consumption had been similar to that of Tyrion Lannister that day, so I'm going to proofread it before I put it out there.
So how about this? Proofread, edit, and then post it. All right, well, let's shut it down because I need to get into the pool.
You go do that. Go enjoy your lagoon and have a safe trip home. Look forward to seeing you back here.
All right, talk to you soon.
Later, man.